Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It's September 14th, 2023. I'm James Jones. With me today, Guillaume Veillette.
Hello.
John Lindemann.
Great to be here.
Greg Lay.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
This is episode 840, and I'm going to preemptively title this game, Why is Balin in Peach's Game? Today, actually, we were recipients of a Nintendo Direct. If you're listening to the show, I don't think this is news to you, but if you're listening to the show a year from now, you now have the context. This was the September Direct that had a bunch of stuff in it. So we're going to talk about it, and we're actually going to try to wrap it inside the context of some emails that you all sent, because we actually got questions directly about the I didn't do that on purpose. That was an accident.
If we had the video, he would have been doing the hand gesture as well. So I don't know how credible his denials are.
I would have been, yes. But that's just natural when I hear the word directly. I just do the hand gesture.
I love the idea. Corrupting you in meetings or whatever.
Directly.
Why does he do that every time he says direct?
I'm not gonna confirm nor deny that if I make the hand gesture when I say the word direct. I definitely just did it now because Greg's put it in my head, so that's cool. I don't have a plan for where I want to start with this one. So I'm just gonna open it up and let y'all talk about the things that aren't the most important thing that was announced, because I'm gonna be the one to announce that, to talk about that.
Okay.
Because I think only I understand its true importance. But let's start with the least important thing. Oh. Well, that's not true. The least newsy thing, which is the Mario Kart 8 is finally coming to a close.
It's finally ending.
We knew it was. We got to see the contents of the last pack. And this one has a bunch of characters in it.
Yeah, it was characters and a track. They've only sort of teased the tracks at this point. We still got the Luigi track or whatever from Mario Kart Wii, then there's still seven to be revealed.
Essentially, we're getting finally funky mode in Mario Kart 8.
Funky mode.
We're getting a woman who's not a princess.
Only the Switch can deliver the power of Funky Mode, as we know from the Tropical Freeze experience.
Indeed. We're getting a woman who's not a princess, so that's refreshing. But we're also getting a character that I know existed at some point, but I can't remember in what context. So, Peachette, what's her deal?
Yeah, is that really a character? Because that is the
just a mode.
As I recall, it was basically a power. Toadette was made playable for New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe on Switch.
Yes. Okay,
and she has a sort of bespoke power up that turns her from Toadette that we've seen in a bunch of Mario games over the years, Mario spin-offs and stuff, into a sort of Toadette Peach hybrid called Peachette. And that then spurred, what if other people wore that thing? What would it do to them?
Yes.
But those were unofficial, right?
Yes, so
very unofficial.
Okay. And so I have to confess, I'm a little bit surprised they're acknowledging the existence.
I was dumbfounded that this was in. I was like, what? Why? To what end?
But at this point, I know that probably some horrible stuff has been put on the internet because of this, but now because there's been this pattern of Bowser using Mario power-ups at the end and you have to fight him, I kind of want to see that now. The Bowser slash Peach.
Just Google it. You'll find plenty of imagery.
That is fair from the point of view that it wasn't some wild leap of creativity that led people down that road. It's become such a thing that he uses the double cherry or the cat bell.
Wears that crown and he just starts baking cakes for Mario and world peace. in the Mushroom Kingdom.
Even like with the Super Mario Bros. Wonder, it's just like, oh yeah, he like touches the flower straight away. Basically, it's like skip to the end.
Becomes a
isn't
building.
It? It's and yeah, it turns into a building there, like at the beginning, rather than we have to wait for the finale for such a thing to happen.
I have become stone. Yeah, I was more than a little surprised that they're even discussing Peachette, because it's like, oh god, what, no, you're just gonna bring it back. We finally got through that phase of people being horny for the Bowser Peach hybrid.
And moreover, it just felt like that was like a bit of a reach for some kind of minor novel element to that port of New Super Mario Brothers U, which was already pretty replete with content, having contained all the DLC, the Luigi mode and everything from the Wii U days. It wasn't that much scope to kind of add to it. So all they did was come up with this character that was essentially a midpoint between Nabbit, as this has carried over into New Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Oh, sorry, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, I should say. And with the Yoshis and Nabbit now, where it's like you've got a character that's like completely invincible, that doesn't really kind of play by the same rules as everybody else. And then you've got the regular character as well. Toadette was in between in that it was more conventional, but she had like advantages that no one else had, such as that power up. So, it's this weird little niche that just like, especially with Super Mario Brothers Wonder coming along now, the Switch has its own side-scrolling Mario game. It doesn't have to go back to the Wii U days. But you just kind of think, okay, yeah, we can forget about that now. But no, we need one more character, to finish this off in style. And apparently, that's it.
They should make the sequel to Super Mario Brothers Wonder, New Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
It will happen. Maybe 10, 15 years from now, but eventually that particular... Some things are just linguistically too good not to do.
What if they then remake that 10 years later and call it New Super Mario Brothers Wonder 4K?
Well, they could call it... Well, if it was 10 years later, they would change it to one... The number one. One D-E-R.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Or you can even do it. I was thinking maybe 1-0 N-D-E-R, but
I
that's
mean,
too weird.
M-A-R-1-O is
they
right
already
there.
Do it for Mario Day, so yeah. It's far more plausible than I was initially willing to entertain.
This is how much they've broken my brain, James. This is how I think now.
Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is how much they've broken my brain.
Yep. So in addition to this DLC, I guess there's also DLC I can't really speak to, but maybe someone else can. The Yoko Taro's Side Order or something. Yoko Taro's Splatoon 3.
It's very stark, the Side Order DLC for Splatoon 3, evidently. We're in a world devoid of color, at least at first. It seems like we're going to be restoring it or something. And also Pearl, I think it is, from the two like idols of the second game, has been turned into Floyd from Jet Force Gemini for some reason. This is a choice. It's promising, like character building, building up your stats as you progress through the game and stuff. And presumably will be quite substantial, considering this is one of the only things, I believe, like first party that falls outside of this current fiscal year, when it says spring of 2024. Yeah, rather than like all the other things, like say for instance, Princess Peach, was a specific date, before the end of March, so before the end of the fiscal year, the Mario versus DK remake was a particular date before the end of the year, fiscal year, whereas that was a spring 2024. So that, along with there was one other game that was in the summer, the Luigi's Mansion 2 HD version. Those are the ones that are sort of going into next fiscal year. So it will be a long time since, 18 months at least, right, from when Splatoon 3 came out, by the time that this DLC emerges. And in particular, it will be a long time since people were forced, and I do mean forced, to plonk down their hard-earned money for the Inkopolis cosmetic DLC.
Yes.
So, I mean, we talk about the idea of earning the interest. Well, they would have given themselves like a solid year to actually earn that interest in this case.
Yeah, they got to compound the full year.
They really put in that philosophy to work. That's the, I mean, I feel like the Octo expansion in the case of Splatoon 2, it was a fair while after, but it was sooner than this, right?
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see if it feels commensurately more substantial, different. We'll see. I personally quite liked the Octo expansion. I wasn't like madly in love with it or anything, but I thought it was pretty good. And I generally kind of like Splatoon single player stuff and feel like they could do more with it. But, you know, I guess we'll see if this particular piece of it actually, you know, kind of delivers on that kind of promise. Perhaps, but yeah, definitely a bit further in the future than I was expecting. It was a lock to be in the direct, you know, and it was, but a little bit of a surprise in that sense.
I appreciate that they basically just decided that, like, we're gonna make this thing a literal full APR. We're gonna get to bank the whole thing. Oh, it's beautiful. Like, the first time they teased this was literally. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was right around this time last year, right around the spring last or earlier this year. So yeah.
Yeah, when they sort of first teased the DLC, so you know it will be a year from then till when it comes out, presumably. Yeah,
and this thing must have gotten knocked off schedule at some point.
You kind of feel that way, don't you? I mean, we know Splatoon 3 itself was late because it's what places for Xenoblade 3. So right. In some sense, you know, it might only be in keeping with that. They have not been, you know, quite on schedule with this project in its other facets. So yeah, maybe you shouldn't really be that surprised. It feels like, maybe on that scale, we shouldn't put too high expectations on it, maybe on that basis, but we'll see.
Speaking of Xenoblade Chronicles 3. We have a release date for the Amiibo.
Yeah, we got to see the Amiibo and, alongside, like, just confirming the Zelda ones, right? They're going to be at the end of this year, and then these are going to be the Noah and Mio Amiibo. That's a linguistic mouthful for you.
I can't even make it work, though.
Amiibo.
I can't, like, they're so close, I can't, like, slam the two words together. It's just there.
They're going to be in January, right, next year, so...
Yes.
It looks like a nice two-pack. If ever there was a two-pack, that's it. That feels, like, appropriate for those two.
Selling them separately would have been sick.
Yeah, well, it might have provoked some really awful consequences.
But the other announcement in the Amiibo space was the Sora Amiibo is real. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It wasn't 100% a guarantee.
I kind of like the fact that it is going to, like, that is almost like the absolute final word in the kind of 10-year journey from, you know, when sort of Smash Brothers for 3DS and Wii U came out to now, with the Amiibo line with it. That last one that will be 10 years, and it will complete it. That's even though there's kind of some gaps in there because it's like, okay, you know, like Zelda characters like Princess Zelda and Ganondorf. Well, the Amiibo they got for the Smash line for 3DS and Wii U, well, that was for their like Twilight Princess versions. Whereas when you get Smash Ultimate, you've got like Link to the Past Zelda and Ocarina of Time Ganondorf. So like they never got Amiibo. So there are actually some gaps, kind of.
Nintendo should wait until the day before this Amiibo comes out. Call Sakurai and just go, hey, run a live stream right now. We just we're announcing another character in Smash Brothers. Here it is. Get to work on that Amiibo, boy. And then don't even give him a chance to respond. Just hang up.
They could have called nobody. But
I
haven't had a chance to gather my formidable array of research materials that he needs to be able to make these things.
Whose feet have you been studying lately? We're going to put him in the game.
I was trying to leave it unsaid, but, you know.
No, I think it needs to be said. I think it's important.
No, if you think so.
As an owner of the of the duo, I now know what the underside of their shoes look like, which is not something I ever contemplated before that direct. And now I think about it every time I see their characters. It's fucking stuck in my brain. Thanks. I even experienced it when I saw You Know Who from another game.
Mm.
That if you can go listen to the spoiler cast on it. I was like, I wonder what her boots are like. Because that's where I'm at now. Thank you, Sakurai, for putting that joke in my head. And it will never escape.
Again, this is where we're at. We're broken.
Yeah, yeah. We're broken. But yeah, the Noah and Mio ones look very good. Best Buy has them up on the website, but they're not for pre-order yet. Unfortunately, it will probably require pre-orders to get them, which sucks.
I'm still waiting to see. I've been waiting to see if they're going to put Big Man up over here. We have it because the Splatoon 3 ones are separate. And you got to go Big Man. You can't not get Big Man, who recently lost the Splatfest, which is a travesty, obviously. But yeah, they're a bit slower, I think, putting pre-orders up over here. So, but you can bet it could be quick with some of the, especially the Xenoblade. Well, I mean, you're talking about it's going to be, 18 months after the game came out. It does have the unlock, I believe, is the sort of alternate costumes for their other guises, shall we say.
I am looking at the Big Man amiibo right now. And I have one thought on it. It's very big.
It had to be.
It's extremely large. This means he has a custom box.
Yeah, he's basically got like a two-pack box just for himself. I love it.
So ridiculous. Yeah, so that covers our amiibo, the amiibo segment. You can now pre-order Zelda and Ganondorf on many sites, so they are available. But yeah, in the US, the Splatoon 3 ones are also not available for pre-order yet. They are coming soon.
November, I think, for them, either. So, like, I think they're a little bit before the Zelda ones, I want to say, but...
Maybe they just haven't told them how many they're going to get, and that's why they haven't put the pre-orders up yet.
Yeah, but again, kind of weird. How, like, I was wondering, like, are they going to be like timed up to the side order? Nope, nowhere near.
Not even close.
This is several months by the side of it.
I like that the Noah and Mio amiibo are rated ages 6+, and I'm like, yeah, no, a 6-year-old is gonna. These are going to be their favorite characters. This is their favorite bedtime story. Set up like Chronicles 3 with its completely fucking unfollowable plot. Perfect for 6-year-olds.
It's all right. They'll fall asleep before the really worrying stuff.
I think the worrying stuff happens in games 1 and 2.
Yeah, true. You'd have to give the sort of, just like, let's try and treat it like its own self-contained story, even though it isn't version.
All right, so there was a space station. Why are you already going to get a different storybook? Get your ass back in bed. There was a goddamn space station and they found some rocks from space and they thought we should put this in a machine. I don't know what it's going to do. It'll be sick. And it was sick. The Kyoto Museum Nintendo I talked about is opening sometime or by the end of the fiscal year, which is cool.
Well, they said it would be done. The building would be done or something. And then they would announce the opening at a later date.
Yes.
Yeah,
they said they were targeting a launch by the end of March 2024. It is weird. So if you go by their area in Japan, I haven't been there since the new office opened. So, but like, it's just there, and it's like there was nothing.
Yeah, that museum that sketch they had of the museum looked very uninspiring.
It does, but it's more than they have now. Like sure. right now they have literally nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm cool with it as long as they don't put anything related to Kirby in there because that doesn't deserve to be.
What if they gave Kirby its own wing?
It's its own separate thing, though, isn't it? Yeah, with Hal, like, I don't. Yeah. Would he qualify even for that?
No, Hal is definitely not Nintendo because they are in the same building and
there is a technical separation there. So I wonder whether they would honor that at all, or whether that would be like a bit.
I feel confident somewhere in that building will be a Kirby. Somewhere in that structure, because it's a big building. in that gift shop, there will definitely be a Kirby.
it's so popular in Japan. You can't forget that. Your Kirby is relatively more popular in Japan than elsewhere.
I do like that it's a remodeled console repair facility. There's something very dark about that in a weird way. But yeah, that's neat. It was weird they threw it in the Direct, I'm going to be honest. Maybe they think there's going to be there's a lot of foreign tourists in Kyoto. Maybe they're going to take time off from going to see thousand-year-old temples to go see a Nintendo art gallery, which I probably would have.
Yeah, they seem to be just more open about stuff like that, or the fact that they're building one is kind of indicates the change in philosophy on things.
It's neat. That's what I would say.
But they used to also never do stuff that really celebrated themselves like that. They never really, you know, like about as far as they would go is you would have like the Nintendo World Store in New York or something like that.
There was where you get your scarves.
Right. And exactly, because scarves are everything. But you know, now it's like with the theme parks and the museum, it's, you know, they're kind of embracing that sort of capitalism, which is good to see.
Wait, even the movie, like the movie was an event. Yeah. The theme park's not in Kyoto, where they're based. It's in Osaka, which is a train ride away. It's like this gives them something in their home city that they can point to and go, that's us. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I'll tell you, if you drive around Kyoto or if you go around Kyoto, you see Nintendo signs for ads, and you know, there's a big Nintendo store in Kyoto.
Yeah, what kind of area is Kyoto? Is it more office spacey?
It's a mix. It's pretty dense. It's pretty densely urban in some spots, and then there's areas that are more traditional. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of signs for the Nintendo store in Kyoto because it has a lot of exclusive Kyoto merch, or at least it has.
Yeah.
So like this is merch that will only be sold at this store. So it was kind of had a lot of ads up when we were there, but also there was a Pokemon game coming out, so they were advertising on fucking every surface imaginable. Mm-hmm. Mario versus Donkey Kong, the original, not the minis.
It's a remake. It's not a new one of the like original format. That's probably, you know, what I would have wanted. It's because that's the thing. They iterated on the minis concept that came as the second Mario versus Donkey Kong game many, many times. But the original Mario versus Donkey Kong game, which was itself an iteration on the Game Boy Donkey Kong, you know, often referred to as Donkey Kong 94. That is, you know, kind of a format I enjoy a lot. Like DK94 is really, really good. I think Mario versus DK was a pretty good go at like a new take on that formula. But you know, one of the weakest parts of it was how it looked. Like the pre-rendered graphics on the low resolution of the GBA was not pretty, in my opinion. So it will be a sort of companion game with the Super Mario RPG remake of being sort of freed from the pre-rendered jail, if you like.
Yeah, I tried to revisit on the in my copy that, you know, my ambassador copy of Mario and DK, and it was tough, and I tried to revisit it right after playing 94, and one of the big, well, there are several big differences. Mario and DK is definitely more puzzly than DK64, which was DK64, 94, it was also like faster paced. You could get through levels very quickly when you knew the tricks.
Yeah.
It was just like such a reliance on pressing the right color of switch all the time. Like that's what most of the puzzles, at least initially, are just like, well, press this switch to make the blocks of this color appear or disappear.
It's quite pervasive, as I recall, even though it's been many years since I played it. And you can even see it in the trailer quite a bit, can't you? Like, not just in some of the levels, but literally a boss fight with DK. It's like he's got the switches in front of him and he's playing, you know, sort of pressing different ones so that affects which platform you have to jump up on to get close enough to hit him. Like, yeah, it is definitely like one of the big themes of the game. I guess guess, you know, facile as it is, it was just one of these things in the brainstorming phase where it's just like, you know what they couldn't do on the original DK9? Well, they didn't have colors. Like, you know, we'll do that.
Yeah, I'm seeing also that the price over here in Canada is $65 as opposed to $70 for most new games or $80 for Zelda, I think. That's a lot for a game that I paid, like $30 back in the day.
Yeah, it would have been certainly $30 US, right, back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. It's not cheap.
No, that's it. You really need to, because again, this could have been, you know, just left to NSO. I mean, I do wonder if that's why we haven't seen, obviously, this game, but also the Game Boy one, DK94, on NSO, because that is one of the, like, kind of stone cold classics of the Game Boy library. And, you know, we've had a lot of Game Boy Color games, like, they actually outnumber the regular Game Boy games, and it's just kind of weird in a way, but it's like, yeah, this is part of it, maybe. It's just like, well, you know, it might show up eventually, but they're going to hold it back until this does whatever it's going to do. But you kind of feel like they might, as nice in some ways as it would be, because like I said, I do think that was one of the weakest things about it, was how it looked. If there's going to be anything, but they did show some co-op play, which I don't believe there was any link cable stuff originally. You know, so that's something. But would there be anything else? You know, some of the things that showed up in latter, you know, the minis kind of iterations, like level creation and sharing and stuff, like, it seems like it would work with you know, the regular, the original kind of Mario versus DK format to me. But yeah, whether we'll see any of that to maybe add a bit of value to it, I don't know. I mean, I recall with the original game, they kind of had like medal times and stuff, you know, so that was kind of how they encouraged replay value versus, you know, like we said, because of the Game Boy Donkey Kong, it kind of begins as a sort of redo of the arcade game. And then, of course, it expands into many, many, many levels, and Mario's got all these moves, and, you know, you do have puzzle concepts and stuff, but it does remain more, like, arcade-y, action-y, as Gil mentioned, than you know, Mario versus DK was. But it had those kind of time trials and stuff, so it's like, okay, well, now you know how to do it, now let's test you doing it efficiently. And that did add some replay value to it, but still, yeah, I do wonder how well it will fare at that price.
So it's one of those, I don't understand how economics works, $49.99 voucher games, where it's like, don't
use your voucher on that.
Don't. You're losing. You're defeating. Just
unless it's going to expire and you really can't think of anything else to spend it on. I mean,
it's bad. It's bad. It's bad play. You lose a penny.
Because I mean, it's like, it's 2 years, but they do expire eventually, right? Yes. Like, I've never come close, but it can happen. So I guess it would have to be that. It would have to be something.
I basically buy them as I'm buying the first game. And then
You're never going to be in much danger. 2 years.
Yeah. So games that are on there, Mario RPG was announced as being, it might have already been there.
Oh, yeah. We already knew that was going to be voucher program, right?
Wario Move It is pre-order voucher. Again, $49.99. Do not spend your money. Do not voucher that game. Don't do it. You're dumb. Another game that was announced today is on there. Another code, TM, Recollection, which is a collection of the two, Trace Memory and Trace Memory and another code, Trace Memory R or whatever.
Yeah, I think so it was Trace Memory, the DS game in America, and then in Europe, the original was known as Another Code, and then its Wii sequel that NOA declined to publish was known as Another Code R.
And
I think both of them might have had like subtitles or taglines about memory.
Sure.
Hence the recollection subtitle for this collection. I'll accept it over stuff like remastered and definitive edition and stuff. Like, you know,
it's remars turd.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, I emphasize the syllable.
I just wanted to make sure everyone caught it.
Because I know a lot of British people just say remastered, don't they? But I don't. I say remastered because that's just where I'm from.
I just want to make sure everyone understood how good that was.
It's good, all right. But yes,
Definitive is the best one.
Definitive,
that's
pretty great. That's Darksiders 2, the one where you play as Death. Anyway, the point is, this was really like compared to the sort of we've already had quite a lot of Mario content. How about some more to keep this sort of victory parade going from the movie? It feels like another code is a far less predictable kind of throwback, and it's not. I remember reading the reviews for the first game, because it did come out in North America, so it got plenty of coverage, and they were quite warm, and it was part of a kind of general revival of these sorts of adventure type games.
Sing games.
Mm-hmm. Sing in particular, who also, there was an analogous situation because Hotel Dusk came out on DS in North America, but its sequel Last Window did not. So that was just localized in Europe. But of course, I mean, DS, you could always import the card and it wasn't region locked like 3DS would end up being. They had very much the same situation play out. I don't know whether there's any suggestion here that those games could be plucked from sort of obscurity similarly one day, but
I mean, after the smashing success that was the Famicom Detective Club games, I think
we're kind of lucky to have this happening, aren't we? That's the thing. I mean, it looks considering obviously the source games were like and stuff, it looks to be relatively kind of reasonable production value remakes here.
Money was spent on this.
Absolutely.
On
this, so this I would describe as quite an upset. And for me personally, because I had sort of, even though it did review well the first game, I didn't play that. And then it was like, well, when the Wii one came out in Europe as a sort of an exclusive almost, it was like, well, I could do that, but I'd have to go back to the first one, and then I didn't end up playing either. Oh, yeah. So, it feels like a nice opportunity to kind of fill that gap again.
And their stories are... Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just that I remember Hotel Dusk and this game, the DS Trace Memory. Are games that I realized I failed to get into. I didn't complete either of them. They were a little bit gimmicky with the features of the DS, like there were, I can't remember in which one, maybe Hotel Dusk, where you had to like stamp something. So you had to close the lid of your DS.
Yeah. I remember reading about that. I think it was in Trace Memory as well. Of course, like they did it in Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks, right?
Oh, yeah.
One of them as well. So it was something
fun. I like it.
Yeah, I just, first, like, how do you produce that in this version? But also, it was my the moment I realized, like, before I thought I liked point-and-click adventure games and I wanted to see them come back, and then I thought, no, I like the ones that are funny and not so puzzly, I guess.
So I played this game during the summer of Too Hot for Games, the DS one. So I bought a copy that had basically been sitting new stock, essentially new old stock, and talked about it on the show, and I actually found that I really enjoyed it. But what I will say is that it is frightfully short. And what do I mean by that? I mean, I started it when I got home from work, which would have been around 6, and got pretty far into it before we recorded the show at 9. And then finished it before I went to bed after the show recorded.
Wow.
It is a very short game.
What was that, six hours?
In many ways, that sequel was kind of, necessary to beef this story, up a bit.
The story literally basically just stops because it continues in the sequel. So If you only had the first game or only had the second game, because of course they were on different systems, just get fucked, I guess. I do wonder why you would send your child, the orphan that you're now responsible for, to Blood Edward Island.
It's so funny. It's a great name.
It's I'm guessing this is not like a big touristy resort place, huh?
It's more of a peninsula, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. You got it. It's just completely inaccurate. I enjoyed this game, the DS one. I thought it was clever. I don't know. Sweet's not the word I would use, but there is a sentimentality to it that worked really well. I'm pleased these are coming out. I'm pleased that I'm going to get to play the second game now. Obviously, I'll have to replay the first one because it's been a long time, but also because it might only take me 7 hours. So whatever. But this one is $60, so this is a voucher candidate. Congratulations. So, this definitely unexpected. We actually have an email about this. I'll read it real quick. Lemonade writes, "My mind was just blown by this direct. How are there remakes of my two favorite DS and Wii games, Another Code, Two Memories, and Another Code R, when their original developer, Sing, was shut down years ago?" We talked about that on the show way back when. I actually saw a leak for this yesterday, and I assumed it 100% fake. Yeah, there were some leaks for this direct. There was one game on 3DS called Chase, Unsolved Cases Division, made by some former Sing people. I played it, and I know James talked about it. I did. Could they be making it? The trailer had no hint at the end of who was developing it. Anyway, I'm just glad it's happening. Chase, Unsolved Case Division, is very good. But even shorter, because it was meant to be like a episodic thing. And that's it. It's just one game. It is frighteningly short. We don't know who's making this game. And so even internally, we always try to find this out when a bunch of Nintendo published games get announced. Who's making them? Where are they being made? And we don't, at least as of recording, don't have an answer for this. I don't know that the company that made Chase with M dashes on both sides of it, Unsolved Cases Division, still exists. It's entirely possible that they brought back Sing developers and had them work on it, and that it's completely unrelated to that group. We unfortunately don't have an answer for you on this one. I would assume there's some involvement.
Beats me.
It's Chase, Chase Cold Case Investigations Distant Memories. What a fucking name.
But yeah, saying they filed for bankruptcy in 2010, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So the crew that made this was at Arc Systems Works, but it was a bunch of Sing people. So they're still around. Arc Systems Works is. I don't know if those people are still there, but I don't know that group worked on these games, though. I think those individuals might have been working on Hotel Dusk and Last Window. I don't know if they worked on the Trace Memory games. Or Another Code games, which implies there's a first code, which I don't know what that code is. So,
and that was just a case of that was the Japanese name, and
right,
it was in that phase we've spoken about many, many times where Europe was like, no, we'll just take the Japanese name, thank you.
Yeah, English sounds great. Whereas Trace Memory made sense because they use a lot of touch gimmicks, so it doesn't really make a ton of sense here. So. I get it, but also there was already an existing name for the second game in English, so that was the one they went with. This is neat. This is a neat announcement. Unfortunately, we can't tell you who's making it because Nintendo hasn't told us. So, oops. F-Zero 99. We could talk about that. So the race to make the next 99 game has come to F-Zero, which is, I don't know, appropriate?
Make a real F-Zero game, you cowards.
It's funny. I mean, this is It's right around, I think, the 5th anniversary of the Switch Online service. So you kind of felt like there had to be something Switch Online specific in this direct. You know, whether it was some kind of drop for the retro games or something. But yeah, I mean, a 99 game would have been a decent shout in general because, you know, those have been kind of a feature. But this is, you know, when you think about the others, you know, Super Mario 35, Tetris, Pac-Man. Yeah, those are like, you know, just huge pillars of the industry, right? You know, these formative experiences that have the broadest possible recognition. F-Zero is very much not that, as much as I like it. And I specifically, you know, obviously this is very much a sort of modification of the Super Nintendo F-Zero, with elements of the subsequent F-Zeros kind of woven in. But, you know, that was a reasonably sort of prominent game, being as it was kind of a launch title and a tech demo in many ways for what Super Nintendo could do that certainly NES couldn't do. Even, you know, some of the 16-bit competitors couldn't do either. But, you know, it wasn't a huge deal, obviously, you know, not to the level of Tetris or Pac-Man or Super Mario. So it's a little bit of a left-field choice in that sense. But my experience with it so far suggests, you know, it's not a bad fit for the format. I've kind of enjoyed it somewhat at this point.
It is wildly chaotic. But you can imagine 99 F-Zero carts on the track all trying to knock each other off. It's gonna be. But that actually is, at least, you know, I've only played one round with AI or with humans, because it does make you go through an interminable amount of training, including going over a track by yourself, which is very exciting.
Well, I don't know. Like, since you're going to be matched up with people, you're going to be competing, it's good to get a feel a little bit for the game before.
And also, again,
shoving you into there.
Because yeah. F-Zero is not Pac-Man or Super Mario, a greater percentage of the people will require familiarization than would be the case with those. But, yeah.
I just wish I could have said, no, I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because like they had that in, like, was it Bowser's Inside Story? Like, it's just like, yeah, have you played one of these before? Okay, you could skip this then. Yeah, that's it's a feature they've known can be useful to have, but
you good? All right, cool. Yeah, so either way, it's fine. But yeah, this is the, as you said, this is the online game. I had fun with it, what I've played so far. I got mad because I lost at the very, or well, I got destroyed at the very end of the race, but you know.
Don't you wish you had more training than that then?
Oh. No, because training wasn't the problem. It was reckless disregard that was the problem.
By who?
By everybody, but by me, how I was driving, by the person who hit me, by Nintendo for making this game, everybody involved was recklessly disregarding.
Are you saying that the game was screwing you over?
I'm saying that, yes. Saying that explicitly. Yeah, is the game's fault. This is not a skill issue. This is purely game, just not right. I've been deceived, bamboozled even. Speaking of the petulant behavior of babies, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door remake is coming to Switch. So now you people can shut the fuck up every time a game that's not Thousand Year Door comes out in the Paper Mario franchise.
Well, yeah, this is what they ended on. You know, it was good, yeah. Right? The kind of
I'm trying to like spread the Mario out.
Yeah, I guess that was the thing, isn't it? Yeah, it was somewhat incumbent on them to do to put it at the end, just so it wasn't entirely kind of concentrated in one particular portion. And again, yeah, perhaps why Mario Brothers Wonder was sort of peeled off and put in advance, because it simply
it'd have been so much.
The Mario concentration levels would simply have been too high.
Well, we did joke. It felt like it was meant to be inside of something else.
Yeah, which is because it didn't really have like a kind of beginning, middle, and end of its own, did it? So it just kind of felt like it could have been part of a broader present, and yeah. I would imagine at least at some point it was before, you know, they made the decision to put it more alongside the Nintendo Live event in Seattle, you know, with the, you know, kind of, was it 4 days over the Labor Day weekend? Yeah. And, you know, all of the just the people, the Smash Brothers tournaments, Splatoon tournaments, you know, like the Zelda performances, Mario Big Band, all this stuff, you know, they kind of had a taste of it on YouTube and stuff. But yeah, so they put it with that. And then that, yeah, at least sort of lightened the load a bit on the direct for just the sheer amount of Mario stuff. But yeah, this came at the end. And again, one of the more predictable things in terms of 2024, Taren mentioned this to me when I was going through all the NOE, like, published games over time. Like, it's just, yep, every 4 years there's a Paper Mario game. So I think, you know, we would have been probably, it would have been a turn up for the books if there wasn't one at some point in 2024. And, you know, in this case, now it's this remaster, you know, kind of remake, whatever you want to classify it as, of Thousand Year Door. So I do wonder if that means that maybe, you know, there will be a actual original game sooner than 2028.
I hope so, because I really love what they did with Origami King.
I'm a big fan of Origami King myself. I mean, what this does, you know, pretty obviously, and there's already, you know, quick on the draw, there's already a video on NWR's YouTube channel with John Redden kind of taking as close a look as one can with what's available at this juncture at the kind of aesthetic changes. And, you know, as you'd expect, really, is very much kind of, okay, you know, where they've brought the Paper Mario aesthetic to in HD for something like Origami King, applied to Thousand Year Door. And it just, I really like where they've got to with it. Just the little bit of extra detail, and especially I think the lighting that makes it feel more physical, you know, that makes it feel more like it actually is kind of a three-dimensional papercraft environment and stuff. And it's not just those things. Like, for instance, they showed kind of the wide shot of Rogueport or whatever. And, you know, instead of just like a kind of, you know, more of a like generic kind of cartoony look, it's like, no, you can see like the different pieces of paper that they've like layered to make the seaside. And then, you know, the environment and stuff. It just, for me, it really adds to the aesthetic. It makes it come to life, you know, in a way that, you know, having played stuff like, you know, something like Super Paper Mario or whatever, it was nice, but I feel like it's really coming to its own in HD. So in that sense, you know, it will benefit a fair bit. And it's certainly, you know, as James alluded to, is a game that has been, you know, requested a lot because people really did like it on GameCube. Although I can't imagine, obviously it's not a terribly large number of people because, you know, GameCube just by itself wasn't that popular. But, you know, in that sense, it'd be nice for it to have a chance to reach a bigger audience.
Yeah, this one is one of those weird situations where the absolute, like, petulance of anything that's not this has turned me off to a game. It's not even the game's fault. Just like any time a Paper Mario, like Origami King, like, game doesn't have any character is a complaint that I have seen bandied about by people who are fans of this game. If you think Origami King doesn't have any character, you need to never speak again. I don't mean about games. I mean, period. You need to just stop talking because you're stupid. And sorry, it's just the way it is. Like, that's just a fact. And the good news is you can't dispute it because you just need to stop talking. So. Done. Problem solved. So this now takes away their ability to complain about stuff ever again. Just as we're just down to Earthbound fans now. We took care of the F-Zero fans. Look, F-Zero fans, this is as good as it's going to get for you. I'm sorry.
You know, one thing that kind of is I've considered that's kind of a bit sad. Well, the notion that like Japanese Mother fans may not get to play Mother 3. On the GBA expansion pack, you know, for NSO. Because if they just release that on its own, the Japanese version, without a localization, or then it just create more complaints than it would satisfy yes. those Japanese players, so they won't yes. do it. And so they won't. They get denied the opportunity to revisit a game that came out in Japan and it was on sale, you know, 2006 or whatever. It was late. Obviously, it was in that period where, you know, NOA had moved on from the GBA. But, you know, it's just various other games, presumably of that sort and that time period, you know, will show up on NSO, but that probably won't because of how many people it would annoy. That's sad, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's not that great a game. You're not missing that much. So, hey, two irascible fan bases, although F-Zero's fan base is five-ish people, have been placated by this direct. They may not feel like it, but, you know, this is as good as you're getting, F-Zero.
They may not admit it either.
Well, that's fine, but I'm admitting it for them, and therefore it is now law.
Yeah, I think there'll always be a lingering bitterness.
To go back to F-Zero and you know, a little bit, I mean, I'll say, as someone who was a big fan of the original F-Zero as well as X and GX, because you know, some people may not be as much, you know, because they're quite different in some ways, or just, you know, it was a long time between the two, right? It was like 91 yeah. to 98. You know, some people who grew up playing F-Zero X, you know, just like F-Zero is like some relic from, you know, antiquity. You know, it's right. completely irrelevant to them. But, what I really like about it so far in many ways is just like, you know, these are tracks, especially the tracks that they're sort of in the rotation at the moment, are basically the ones that you could do the time trials on. I've mentioned this in the past, that Super Nintendo F-Zero is baffling in that it has 15 tracks and yet it doesn't let you do time trials for most of them. It only let you do time okay. trials for the five of the Night Cup, the first cup, and then like, one of the White Lands and one of the Port Towns from the other two. And that was it. Totally bizarre, but like these are the tracks that are in the rotation at the moment. Obviously, I'm sure the other ones are there, and we're going to get to them with some of these different like rotating events and stuff. But these are tracks as a result of that as a child, I played over and over and over and over and over again. And so I know them really well. And yet there's all this crazy shit happening on it that is the complete opposite of me by myself doing time trials on it. It's a real sort of head fuck, as it were, really, in that sense. It's like, I know this, and yet I don't. That has been really fun, actually.
Yeah, I actually think that this game captures the spirit of F-Zero more than just like stupid story missions from F-Zero GX. Like, the idea that this is a racing league where we have said, no, fuck safety. We want to make this as unsafe as we can possibly make it. And then that's where we're at. We've created a rate. What if we put 99 cars and make them all jam into the track at one time?
Yeah, it's, I mean, like I said, there's some elements from F-Zero X, GX that kind of come in because of the boost system, you know, boost being your health rather than something you kind of earn per lap. But of course, now, I mean, you know, at the time, with F-Zero X, it was like, oh, God, you know, 29 other cars, you know, there's all this possibility for carnage. But obviously, a lot of the, you know, when you play in the, Grand Prix mode, it's all bots, you know, and they weren't that aggressive even on the hardest right. difficulties. And then if you play in local, you know, with friends, well, you know, that they might be more bent on your violent demise, but there's only four of you tops. So like with this now, it's the, and I talked about this, like where we said like, oh, you know, the idea of like a GX remaster online of just like, I would love to see what 30 cars of F-Zero online all at once looks like with humans driving those cars. Well, now you get 99 of them.
What if you get three times that number?
And I mean, it's not quite the same as that because, I mean, you got the spin attack, which is, you know, something that it seems pretty vital for self-preservation rather than just killing people because it provides defense. And so, right. like, it's, and it's on a cooldown. So it's like really a lot of the time you're kind of like, look, you don't want to use it willy-nilly. You want to save it for where it's like, okay, I know there's a bottleneck coming, a turn coming where everybody's just going to scrunch together, trying to get the inside, you know, jockeying for position. That's when I need to be able to spin to not get just, you know, violently crushed between cars, bounced into the railing and, you know, either just dead outright or left with so little boost that you're going to be trundling along at the back, even if you do survive. So, like, that's like an offensive weapon, but also kind of a defensive one. But what you don't have, which is what I really do dearly love in F-Zero X and GX, is that sideways kind of shunt. Because that was always like the technique that I liked the most, more than the spin attack of just like you know, boosting up alongside someone and then just pinning them against the wall and watching them pinball. Just that was you can't do that. So it is like you have some of the pleasures of F-Zero X and GX, but not all of them. But still, it's a really interesting mix of the series, and so far it seems like it's working pretty well. But as we know, with things like this, the beginning is always like the best time. Because pretty soon it filters down into, you know, the people that just want to play it all the time and get really good at it, and it gets progressively less enjoyable as a result. So quite apart from the question of, you know, this presumably will one day simply be, you know, shut down like the other, you know, sort of service games of this sort, it will probably just get much less fun. In a matter of
absolutely
weeks, months, you know, most. So get in on it now. If there's any, you know, if you're a Switch Online kind of member and you have any possibility in your mind that this might be fun, as soon as possible is the best time to try it.
Right. I just want to add my one nitpick that doesn't really matter. I wish you could change the controls, because the B button should not be used to, you know, for gas.
No, I don't. I know what you mean. B for brake, A for accelerate. That's
or anything three races else like that.
Yeah, or anything else, because I played on the Switch, you know, on the screen anyway. Like the B button's awfully close to that right control stick.
Yeah,
and it's just not comfortable. So I wish we could change it. That's it.
Yeah, I agree. Guillaume nailed it. I'm gonna pivot to some third party stuff here. Y'all good with that?
Sure.
Well, I guess should we just finish off Peach before, like, because we haven't really talked about Peach.
I know. I'm just trying to spread the Mario stuff out.
Okay. Fair enough.
I was gonna come back to Peach.
Okay.
I'm trying to do a better job of this than Nintendo did.
It's true. They did that. Even with some efforts, it was quite concentrated.
I'm gonna jump to this one. Way Forward is back in the Contra space with Contra Operation Galuga.
Yeah, I got a chuckle out of this. I feel like this is the Contra game that nobody asked for.
Yeah.
But we got it.
So
it's strange.
We got that Contra game already. That was the first Contra game on Switch.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, that weird kind of third-person shooter that was also co-op, that was also not very good.
Rogue Core that we've seen sell for a couple of quid over here, I assume analogous prices elsewhere in the world. It'll just give you a sense of how wonderfully well that succeeded.
Yeah. Yuck. So this is made by WayForward, who have made the Contra 4 on the DS. It kind of looks like that game minus the grappling hook, you know, a little bit.
It's a reimagining of the first Contra, whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, so you kind of feel like maybe it's a bit like, you know, something in the light. I think we talked about this a bit ago. The X68000 Castlevania. You know, where it's like, well, it's very much based on the original Castlevania, but it's not just the original Castlevania. It's kind of like a remake, kind of like an embellished version, you know, but it could almost be considered a sequel. I don't know, because there seem to be scenarios in this that I don't know the original Contra that well compared to like Contra 3, especially, the Alien Wars, Contra Spirits, whatever, Super Pro Protector, whatever you want to call it. But it seemed like there were some scenarios in the trailer that seemed like they were more out of Super C and 3 than out of the original to me. So, yes. Definitely does look like it's not just, oh, remember the original Contra, but now with polygonal graphics? Because that's not that, I mean, it for a way forward game, it was not that sexy looking, I have to say. It was,
I kind of thought it was a little bit bland for them.
Yeah, aesthetically, it was kind of bland. You know, obviously, Contra 4 was pixel art and was really quite nice. Way forward were, maybe they still do the odd thing that's pixel art, but I mean, not so much as they used to. I mean, you think of their pixel art games in the old days, they were really, really good. And Contra 4 was, you know, obviously very faithful to the Contra aesthetic, you know, as you'd kind of been, you know, conditioned to expect from it, you know, by things like the 16-bit Contras. But, you know, that was really good. And then you think of like some of the kind of things they do where they try and sort of mimic a hand-drawn style or a comic book style or all this kind of stuff. And then it's just like, yeah, here's like a polygonal style that is going to remind you of that Rogue Core game that, you know, obviously was not a side scroll. That was a totally different kind of game. Whereas this is Contra, you know, this is obviously it's patterned on the very first game, but you know, it's got these kind of like, so it looks like vaguely maybe 2.5D elements in some way, or at least like a kind of Klonoa style, like we're kind of, you know, we're on a fixed plane, but we're going around like a tower or something like that. So, you know, there's clearly some embellishments there. I guess we'll see how well that kind of does with the gameplay, or if the gameplay really is kind of just super faithful. But I mean, clearly there were things in the trailer that were, you know, straight out of the original Contra, as you'd expect, you know, particular bosses and so forth. Even I can recall fighting in the original Contra. So, you know, I'm more hopeful of how it will play than what it looks like, because it's not very, especially, you know, relative to Way Forward's, you know, other work, it doesn't distinguish itself visually. But I assume there's reasons for this. Maybe this was something that, you know, this is how Konami wanted it to look, and they're just kind of executing that. I don't know.
Probably, but this doesn't mean I can't say it looks kind of ugly, because it looks kind of ugly.
Yeah, I'll probably get it when it's on deep discount pretty soon.
Same.
But if I want Karen to play it with me, this reimagining will have to get rid of the vertical bit where if you jump too quickly, you kill your partner.
Oh yeah.
This one has four player co-op.
Yeah, that's one of the big additions. So what if you could kill three of your partners?
Yeah, that's the thing. Surely you've got to be a bit more accommodating on the basis of that, surely.
Or not. I feel like the Contra ethos is fuck them.
I mean, I guess they could have like a classic mode and then a new mode or something if they want to like still offer some a version that's kind of completely faithful to that original
preview. Yeah, basically like in every belt scroller now there's like the A mode or B mode, I don't know which, like the no friendly fire mode,
right?
Because some people hate that.
I felt like this game would be interesting to talk about a little bit, and we did, so now I want to move on. So I've got the next one up, which is Saga Emerald Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
A new Saga game coming in 2024 with 6 characters and a lot. There a lot was said in this trailer, and I may have had a mini stroke during it. It's not clear. Did you pick stuff up, John?
Yeah, I didn't really pay attention too closely.
This goes right through my anime filter, and I just completely ignore it.
I'm mostly interested, but I had predicted that something Saga-ish would be in this direct just because I saw that these Saga games actually went on sale the day before the direct. And so I'm excited to play Scarlet Grace, I guess. Like, I'm excited to play the old Saga games that came out that are now at on a deep, deep discount. And it's very unlikely that I'm going to pick this one up as soon as it comes out. It seemed a little bit rough, maybe. Like, a lot of these games, a lot of the footage that they were showing, I thought seemed to have frame rate problems.
I mean, this one in particular is still a ways off.
Yeah, and it's coming on, PlayStation 4 and 5, I believe, and Switch, and it, who knows? Like, there's time to optimize this, of course, if it's coming out in 2024. But right. Wait and see.
Now, if I may speculate on what may have activated John's anime filter, was it the bit where there's a singer who's lost her body and so is like some sort of like tin can robot that sings now?
Was probably right around there.
Is that of thing that might.
Like, that was definitely the possible moment I had a mini stroke. It's not clear, but yes, this is some Saga stuff we're looking at. We got Asper Media is going to do HD remasters of the three original Tomb Raider games.
Yeah, and they still look shitty.
Yeah, they do.
They look really bad.
They look a lot better. The screen wipe, you know, where it sort of changes the graphics.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, all right, yeah, now do another one.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it never comes. keep getting better. Yeah, it's going to keep going, right? It's going to keep getting better. No, it's just that. Okay.
We're done. Well, it's like, so they show a bunch of video of it, and I'm like, God, I forgot how rough those games looked. And they're like, these are remastered graphics they say the original. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's like, now instead of, like, when did those games first come out? Like, what, 96 or something like that?
Yeah, basically.
And it's like, now instead of looking like they came out in 96, they look like they came out in 2001. 99.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just a bit later in the 90s, maybe. No, somewhat upgraded kind of Lara Croft model, so it's a little bit more, like, recognizable, with the sort of renders that they use to promote the game. You know, rather than like what she actually looked like in the game, which was just like so abstract. You know, the upgrade that's there, I'm sure, is worth something, but it is modest, like for sure. Metroid Prime remastered, this is not.
No, and hey, by the way, if you haven't played these games before or haven't played them in a very long time, they're very bad.
They're not really. They're not great.
We have an email about when is dated. No longer dated. This is not an example of that. These games are dated as shit, and they were fairly dated right away.
Yeah, well, I think 2 and 3 like were never like they kept getting worse and worse, right? Like, but the first game was enjoyed back when it came out, and I feel like there is something to having that available now, because they've been remade since, like, there was the Legend version.
Yes.
Which I tried to play, but I thought that they lost so much in that transition. You know, the Tomb Raider Legend, there's like this moment where you first see a T-Rex, right? And I think that in the original game, it's kind of this surprise, like it's just like, oh shit.
Because it's like, why is there a T-Rex here?
Right, and it's going to eat me, and I need to shoot at it and get away and everything. But in Legend, it got turned into this, you know, lead up, like with a cutscene, and then the way that you fight it is through a series of QTs. It's like, it's very much a remake of its time. So I'm glad that at least we're not getting that. And I was kind of happy to see, like, okay, like it's they spruced up the original game a little bit.
I think they used the word faithful, didn't they, couch what you were about to see. And so, yeah, it's something that is actually, you know, what those games were back then. I remember, like, a particular issue of, I think it was Computer Video Games, you know, where it was like they were reviewing the import of Super Mario 64, the import of Night into Dreams and Tomb Raider, all in the same issue, you know, of just like, okay, the sort of three different kind of takes on what 3D action can be, kind of thing. That, you know, it was at that point, you know, Super Mario 64 hadn't really existed when this game made, so, you know, like analog controls and, you know, all the things that kind of helped to usher in weren't really, you know, a standard yet and all that. So it's, you know, I've not played any of these games, any of them, any Tomb Raiders at all, but certainly not these ones. So it would kind of be interesting on some level, I think, to see, you know, the other side of that divide, you know, that I was on, obviously importing an N64, getting Mario, you know, what was happening on the other consoles, other formats for, you know, how to do a game, a 3D action game at this very formative stage.
Yeah. And I don't think they even had the 3D controller yet on PlayStation, did they?
No, like I said, because Knights, like there was an analog stick controller, you know, for that on Saturn, but yeah, DualShock was a bit later, I think. For PlayStation.
So this would have been I played this game when it came out, and I remember thinking it felt weird. Or not immediately when it came out.
It was a little bit like Prince of Persia in a way, like the original 2D game, you know, like there was a like the distances were kind of set when you were walking or when you were like going backwards, like you had to kind of count the you know, I don't know, like you couldn't go from one to you know, running like immediately, like from not moving to running immediately. There was kind of a build up. So, you know, if you wanted to long jump, basically, like you I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Count steps, and it's like discrete, yeah. An element to the movement.
Yes. Yeah. It was very mechanical in some ways.
Yeah, it was much more touchy than. Yeah.
Like, well, because they just didn't know how to program all that stuff yet. And it showed. And I think I actually played it a little bit after it came out, because I think I played Mario 64 first. And boy, that's not a nice comparison. Just in terms of smoothness. I'm going to talk about the most important announcement now. And by that, I mean the announcement that made me make a noise I cannot replicate when I saw the beginning of the trailer. And it wasn't what I thought it was, but that's okay. The very poorly named Unicorn Overlord.
Now, let me just say that when I heard the voiceover for the person that was announcing this and describing this, I thought it was a parody.
Yeah, a little bit.
I thought I was waiting for them to break into like, oh no, here's the actual voice. That's just being overdramatic.
It's also, there was a little bit of like whiplash, because like for so many of the other games, even like the third party ones and stuff, it's still sort of left to the Nintendo Direct narrator. Right. To kind of like introduce the game, to say something about it. So it felt like it was the one time where we really like switched narration that just felt kind of jarring.
I think
some of that comparison did make it feel like, oh, we've gone from like normal narrator guy to like 90s movie trailer guy.
Yeah.
I can understand that reaction.
Oh, yeah. No, I was
definitely more fixed on the visuals of just like, this looks like Vanillaware. It must be Vanillaware. There's the food. It's definitely Vanillaware. Yep.
Yes. So the funny thing is, so as I was watching it, and the Atlas logo splashes up really early in there too, my immediate thought is like, so I've seen people like say, oh, like games like Final Fantasy Tactics. No, wrong. You are wrong and are not educated in this field and should stop. This is not a tactics game. This is an Ogre Battle inspired game. And I can prove it, because when they showed putting together the units, they used the exact same contrasting colors of orange and purple for the grid. They are not hiding it.
In that voiceover that we found so kind of dodgy, like there was some wording about like a revival of this sort of action. And again, that doesn't work if it's Final Fantasy Tactics like that.
No, because they keep making those.
Yeah, like, you know, like Fire Emblem, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like that.
And Tactics Ogre is already on Switch.
Which is
the progenitor.
What they're alluding to clearly isn't that, just on that, the wording of that alone.
Right. Yeah, so there's only four games in that style, basically. There is the original Ogre Battle, there's Ogre Battle 64, there's Ogre Battle Gaiden, which we never got. That was a Neo Geo Pocket Color game. And then there is Soul Nomad, which is a game from the Disgaea team that is very clearly taking cues from Ogre Battle and then putting it in a Disgaea wrapping. And they introduce some quirks about like unit formation that make it more complicated and make it more tactical. And those seem to actually be in this game. So like they showed the grid and there were different shaped grids for different unit types, which is something that Soul Nomad introduces. Whereas in Ogre Battle, every grid is 3x3. So you could pick a unit that's got a 6x2 grid. So it's 6 wide, 2 deep. There might be reasons why you would do that. There might be reasons why you would think that's really poor. It depends on what you're trying to build with that unit. It introduces another layer of like, okay, how do I make this unit perfectly suited for what I want to do with it? But that also means if you side attack a 2 wide unit, you can really fuck them up. That's all in there. The game looks really good. And by God, one of my games of the year, the year I didn't play it, was a Vanillaware game, because 13 Sentinels, their last game, is a fucking masterpiece. That was their first time making games in that style, multiple styles of game that they had never made before. They hadn't made a visual novel like that before. They hadn't made a strategy game. Like, I'm very much interested in this product in a lot of ways. It looks really nice. And the idea of the world that you're army is in is open and you can move around wherever you want and you then can run into trouble when you hit stuff is interesting, and I'm curious how much they implement it. If it's literally like you've got a vague objective, you need to take that spot, but how you want to get there, I don't care. That's an unprecedented amount of freedom for a strategy game like this. So, you know, it's possible that maybe that trailer is overselling it a little bit, but if that's actually what they've built, that could be something else in a really fun way. So I'm like, it was what, about a 2-minute trailer? And I popped off a little bit for it, I'm gonna be honest. So that was my like, hey, here's a surprise for you that you'll be happy about. Now, they did Eudian Chronicles dirty by putting that game basically like right after it.
The pixel art, it's kind of like, you know, a sort of, I guess you've been a Suikoden and, you know, kind of spiritual successor, right? It makes sense. Right. But, you know, that kind of 32-bit like sprite art on, you know, kind of 3D backgrounds thing, but the sprite art is really nice. Like more, you know, more advanced, you know, higher resolution kind of.
They're not going for the chibi look of 16-bit RPGs at all.
No. I thought that actually, you know, aesthetically looked pretty strong. They had some funny looking shark people as well. That's
sure did.
Music. So yeah, it's, but yeah, I know what you mean. Vanillaware, you know, when it comes to aesthetics is a tough bar to be compared to.
Yeah, like that they could have like Mario, they could have spread those two out from each other a little bit further. But they were in the third party holding tank, so I guess there was only so far they could put them away from each other. There were a couple PC games that got announced. I had it in front of me too. I just lost it.
Trombone Champ.
Trombone Champ was the second one I was going to mention. But yeah, we can go with that. So that game, I want to bundle that with WarioWare because as Greg, you pointed out, what was special about these two games.
Well, yeah, but all these years into the Switch's life, they've remembered that there is an IR camera on that Joy-Con, and by gum, we're going to use it.
Two games at the same time, both decided today's the day for the IR camera. Trombone Champs is by far the funniest, because if you're not familiar with that game, I don't know if it was made as a joke. I think it was very much made tongue. I mean, it is very much tongue in cheek game, but it was a game where you controlled playing a trumpet on the note highway. If you're not, excuse me, trombone. If you're not familiar with the trombone, it doesn't have buttons. It's got a slide valve. And so, you know, there's all the range between the notes. You can slide between them. So the idea was you'd use the mouse to set how far out you had the slide and to try to hit the notes. And so it was basically like your Guitar Hero, but with the slide being the control rather than buttons. They've decided to do this either with Joy-Con motion controls or with the IR camera, where your hand right. is the slide.
Yeah. So I guess, like, in a way, Johnny's getting his theremin hero if he sets up his Wii Remote, not Wii Remote, but the
Switch.
The Joy-Con a certain way, then, yeah, you can kind of fake it. That doesn't sound like a theremin, but...
Theremin can sound like whatever you want it to. You could make a trombone-sounding theremin.
Sure.
Get me my trombone theremin.
My one issue with that, I think maybe the motion controls would work well. My experience with controlling something with the distance of my hand from the IR sensor of the Joy-Con has not been a good one. I actually played this WayForward game called Vitamin Connection, which is this co-op weird little mini games-ish adventure. Like, it's really, really weird, but there is a segment of it, like, basically it has you kind of try different things with the various features of the Switch. And so it's never going to be ported to anything, I don't think. But one of the things we had to do, one of us was controlling their own thing, and the other one was, using the distance of the hand from the IR sensor to, I can't remember the details. The short version is it didn't really work. Like, it was really, like, it really felt like, tapping your head, rubbing your belly at the same time. Like, it was basically a brick wall. We couldn't progress more than that. And also, we weren't finding it very fun. But this is different, though, I suppose, because Trombone Champ is doesn't seem to be all that concerned if you're doing well or not.
No.
And that's kind of the part of the fun, right? Because you're going to sound horrible. The note highway calls out that it sounds nasty or meh. And that's part of why it's fun.
Yeah, the four player seem to promise some truly atrocious sounding results.
Oh, yeah. No, they know, like, what they're doing.
That is the point, isn't it? Just like, oh, yeah, the four trombones very imperfectly sort of harmonize.
Wow. Oh, it's and the thing is, because if you're using either motion controls or the very, very, like, finite, like, distance you can move, you're going to have warble. Like, it's gonna kind of slide in and out. It's gonna be awful. And Trombone Champ is meant to be stupid. Like, it is. The characters.
It's a party game, this version.
The characters look like Muppets, literally. They're styled after Muppets, and they're out there playing Happy Birthday on a trombone in a Guitar Hero style scoring system. It's so stupid.
Is this making fun of Guitar Hero or Wii Music or both?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Whatever it is, it's from the late aughts, I guess.
Yeah, so the PC version, though, you can make your own tracks and you can take music in. Or as the most iconic one of somebody who did Liz Truss's resignation to trombone to Trombone Hero. So there's the Muppet playing it.
It was a very good 7 weeks. I don't know what the gag is.
So the puppet is over the video of her giving the resignation, and all of her speech is just covered up by the trombone noise.
But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you had the gag in The Simpsons with George Bush saying, well, since I accomplished all my goals in 4 years, there was no need for a second term.
That's right.
4 years, call that efficient. 7 weeks, job done. Fuck off. I don't understand why this is risible. I really don't.
Like, I wouldn't even remember where all the things in my house were stored in 7 weeks after moving in. That's like a 3 month
I wouldn't even unpack
job.
Everything in my office after 7 weeks.
It's like, oh, God, I've still got boxes. Well, at least they're still boxed. I guess that's fine. God.
The other big kind of party-ish game that uses the IR.
WarioWare was shown to use the IR.
Oh my god. So my brain didn't even comprehend what I was saying. I missed the fact that, like, I saw the minigame of the weird chicken with the human hands, kind of, you know, struggling to get to lay the egg, to get the egg out.
Yeah, it's a disturbing
image. I missed right before that this is, you're doing motion controls to do this. So you are basically taking a shit, you know, or appearing to take a shit.
Pantomiming taking a shit, hopefully.
Finally, yeah. We will all experience the miracle of childbirth as an avian.
That's a soprano scene with Dr. Melfi, I think. It's just that she says, like, oh, well, you know, it's an experience that a lot of people have likened to childbirth. And it's a patient soprano, trust me, it's like taking a shit. He could have been talking about WarioWare, gentlemen.
He had all the foresight.
So this was like, I was delighted and horrified at the same time.
Yeah,
basically.
That's the WarioWare experience.
Yeah, looks very funny.
Yeah, they are really leaning into it on this one. I like that we have the new WarioWare voice. First thing we hear from him is a vacation with these, what's the term you use for them? Was it dorks? Basically, he's mad. He's stuck on a vacation with the rest of his
the people that he regularly like rips off and exploits. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why are you the one upset? They should be mad you're here. They know what's coming. So that was very wild that we had two games show. We didn't get a ton of new content on this one. Like, there's 200 games, which is quite a lot. Confirmed 4-player. And I don't think we got anything else, really, besides the hand motion stuff. What have I missed? I know we haven't talked
about
Dave the
Diver,
yet.
I think, was probably the
other
Steam game.
Yeah.
That's a really
Dave
big one on Steam.
Another PC game that's coming. There's a few PC games that got announced. We're not going to go through every game. But yeah, Dave the Diver has been getting really good reviews on Steam.
Yeah, really good reviews.
So I almost bought it the other day. I was like, oh, actually, it's coming to Switch. Perfect.
Yeah.
So basically, you dive underwater and you shoot fish with the harpoon gun, and then you cook them in your sushi restaurant. And the idea is that stuff is constantly changing around you. So what's going on underwater will be different on different days. And of course, you can get upgrades to your restaurant to change what's happening up there as well. And so you're just trying to constantly pursue better and better fish for sale in your increasingly quality restaurant. Which it doesn't sound like it's a super involved game, but having seen people play it, there's a lot going on in this game. It's neat.
Yeah, I'll do some quick hits here. I got an article up with them.
Sure.
Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown looked kind of neat.
Did it?
It looked okay.
I think there's been favorable impressions of that when it's been shown at Gamescom and stuff, right? Like, it's.
Let me offer a counter. They decided that the DLC costume would be Warrior Within. So clearly they have bad taste.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got another trailer for Detective Pikachu.
Yep. Which honestly, if you told me it was the same trailer we had already seen, I'd believe you.
It's pretty close at hand, that one as well, right? Like that is not far away.
Yeah, we just saw it. Yeah, and it's coming out in October, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I saw Tim, is that his name? Tim's dad, and he looks just like him. I was I jumped to the future.
It's Tim
with
a beard. Yeah, I know. It was so funny.
They showed Horizon Chase 2, which looks a lot like Horizon Chase.
Yeah, I always heard good things about it with the first one.
It's a really good game. Yeah, I got it on Steam. It's or the original on Steam. It's really good.
Yeah.
Ayuden Chronicle 100 Heroes.
Yeah, we mentioned that one, that it was shown alongside the other one.
And I think that is it, aside from Princess Peach.
Yeah, so I guess we'll get to the princess now.
No, just very quickly, the Japanese direct.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Showed basically an RPG called Stray Children. It's from Onion Games, and it's basically, you know, Moon Remix RPG Adventure, kind of a successor to that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It looks very much like it.
Also, there was Shirin, the Wanderer 6, was in that as well. It was another thing. Not the very nice sort of pixel art of the one that's already on Switch. Polygonal. Obviously, other than that, I couldn't really tell too much about the game in Japanese. I don't think they had anything more on Good Feels Goemon on type of game, but I think they released a trailer themselves, not long ago, maybe a week or two ago, because of course all of this is in the build up to TGS. So, even if it's not something that's actually in the direct, there's going to be lots of things going on with Japanese companies, in the build up to that. So, and that continues to look really kind of interesting, but also this is probably not going to get localized, is it? Because it's so Japanese and, doesn't seem to have like a big publisher backing it, it seems to be another Good Feel thing that they're doing themselves. So, I don't know what the possibility for that is, of playing it, kind of being able to enjoy every aspect of it, but, I have played Goemon games without having any idea what's going on and enjoyed them. So perhaps it can, kind of live up to that legacy.
And Stray Children has been confirmed to be brought over.
Yeah, they are localizing that, even though it wasn't in the direct, in the English-speaking territories.
All right, so that takes us back to Princess Peach. Who wants to give the full title of this thing?
Princess Peach Showtime.
Showtime.
You gotta take the cardboard box off, haven't you, and then say it in the style of the Brawl unveiling.
As I noted in the beginning, there is a sequence in this in which Balin from Balin Wonderworld is in it.
Is this the hat costume?
Yes,
presumably.
It looks very much like the masquerade Balin.
I was thinking like female Zorro or something, but fine.
Yeah, I mean the mask is really big for Zorro, but yeah. So the idea of this one is that Peach is at the theater, and just like any time Peach does anything, something bad happens.
Disaster follows.
Right. A loyal toad gave her this theater ticket.
So a traitor, essentially.
Yes. Yes.
This was a setup. And as a consequence now, the theater has been overrun by, what were the enemies called?
The sour, like the grape bunch sour bunch.
Grape and the sour bunch or something.
Yeah, the sour bunch.
Grape seems to be some sort of a witch, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. It's grape and the sour bunch sounds like a movie from the 60s about bank robbers from the 30s.
Yeah, the stars like Don Hall.
It sounds like the children's parody version of we need to have some sort of reference to, like in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, and we're going to sort of reference the Wild Bunch without actually doing it. So it's like grapes and the sour bunch.
Yeah, it's so weird. But the theater's been overtaken, and so now she goes onto the stage and joins the show to retake it back. But it's not just the theater. There's an art museum, and I can't remember what the other ones were.
Well, there are other plays, basically. So,
I thought it was other places, because one of them is very much an art museum.
Yeah, no, it was a play about a detective solving a heist, basically.
Oh, I didn't read that was another play, but okay.
Right, they're all plays. It's always the same idea. I think they say in other theaters have been invaded or something.
They do, but then they're like in the art. It's like, wait, is this theater? Is this an art show? Okay, whatever. All right. So basically, the gimmick here is that Peach has a ribbon from her hair because again, it's Peach that she can use as a weapon, but also it is got magic somehow. Was it like a fairy or something?
It's like a separate character, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, the theater director or something. Yeah. I can't remember what they called it, but yeah.
I guess it's a little bit like the umbrella she had in Super Princess Peach was like a character. It wasn't just like a regular Broly.
And she can transform into other forms. So
she's just getting in character.
The first one they showed was a sword form, which is exactly what it sounds like. She had a sword, and she could use it to cut big vines. As Guillaume mentioned, there was a detective form. Did they say what the detective form's power was?
Well, she's looking at clues. Like, literally, it showed her just looking at invisible footprints that she could see, I guess, with her magnifying glass.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that's a thing. Like, we don't really know what the gameplay is like. It seemed to be very, like, all over the place.
Yeah.
Kind of mini games-ish, maybe.
Definitely. Like, one of the costumes was the Kung Fu costume. And that seemed to be, like, some kind of, like, timed button presses to, like, counter someone in a duel. But then, you know, when we got the Patissier Peach, where she's like ice in a cake, and yeah, as you mentioned, the sort of like low tech detective vision, like it does seem right. Like it could be like an assortment of gameplay styles based on these various kind of productions that are going on in the theater. So you do wonder, in a case like that, you know, is there going to be enough depth to any of them for them to be that engaging? Or, you know, does the variety and just, like, if they don't overstay their welcome kind of make up for that? It all remains to be seen. But obviously this was all much, much more informative than the first glimpse where, you know, we didn't have a name. We didn't have that much about anything of the concept other than, you know, it kind of involved the stage in some way. So, you know, it was quite informative, but leaves a lot yet to be answered.
Well, my thinking is that we're used to being able to enjoy Mario games because they cast a wide net, like, and they're good for children but also for people who grew up with Nintendo. I feel like maybe this game is aiming a little bit targeting a younger audience, and that's fine. I enjoyed watching the trailer, even as I was thinking, like, I don't think this is for me.
Yeah.
But this looks pretty fun. Like, it looks like whoever had the idea in Super Mario Odyssey to have her in each world just, like, wearing different outfits.
Yes.
Like, it looks like that person was given free reign to do their thing in this game.
What if this was a game? Because that's like a post-game thing, right? Like, you say, right. It's been quite a few years, but you save Peach, and then you get to see her visit all the kingdoms that you went through when you revisit them, and she's got a bespoke kind of outfit that's appropriate for that environment.
Yeah, she's got like an explorer's outfit, or like doesn't she have like a kimono in that kind of ancient Japan?
Definitely, the Bowser Castle world, like no, exactly. So like it's very much like we could. Extrapolate this into a game virtually.
Right. I can get behind the Kung Fu Peach. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. They positioned this game in kind of a weird way because they teased it with almost nothing. And then they showed it very early in a direct this time. So I don't have a great feel for how much they're putting stock in this one, but I kind of got the same read as Guillaume of, like, this looks kind of simple.
Yeah, I looked at this game and I said, this looks like a 7.5 waiting to happen.
John thinks only in numbers.
That's what I said. Well, it looks like the kind of game where you play it, it's probably kind of short, it's not bad, it's not great, but you're like, it's pretty good, it's decent enough.
It kind of reminded me of, like, a 2.5D Kirby game in that respect. Like, this is kind of, there's going to be lots of weird different gameplay variation. But it's going to keep everything relatively simple. But I don't know. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe this is going to be the most technical game Nintendo. Maybe it's got bullet time dodging. Who knows? We'll find out. But yeah, they showed just enough, I think, because this game isn't coming out till next year. They showed just enough to kind of give some context on what this game is, rather than the first thing they showed, or we all were like, what the fuck was that?
It would only be fair, I suppose. They let Bayonetta dress up as Peach. They should let Peach dress up as Bayonetta for just ridiculously hardcore character action gameplay.
I mean, you want to talk about the internet being horny, that was just like set off. That'd be like an asteroid hitting the Earth.
There is no way the creative fellow allows that to happen. It's absolutely not. If you just asked him, he'd just stare at you. He wouldn't even answer. It's just he'll tell you no with his eyes. Yeah, I think that's pretty much everything for the direct. We skipped some stuff, but we don't need to go through all the items. It was a lot. There was a lot in this direct. Overall, pretty good. What do y'all think?
Yeah, not bad.
It was happy and colorful and everything. It's pretty rare that they see a Nintendo Direct and think, like, that was shit and disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, because they're not going to put one together that's full of garbage.
Yeah.
No, they just won't do it.
I think it was broadly kind of fall in line with what you expect for, like, this time of year, because, again, they've had one pretty much every September for many years, although I think, you know, in 2020 it was more of like a mini thing, or I forget exactly, it wasn't like a full direct because it was part of that big gap where there was no full size direct. But even that September they had something. But you know, so you expect that, and you expected you're filling in on the details about some games we knew about, and then, you know, some of the stuff that we didn't know about kind of felt like, yeah, that fits the kind of where we are in terms of, you know, it does feel like we may well be, you know, especially like, you know, with Super Mario Brothers Wonder, you know, well, it's soon at hand, you know, soon be kind of behind us. That might in some ways be one of the last kind of really major original kind of games on Switch in some way, you know, that we've had Zelda already, and then, you know, with that finally getting, you know, the its own side scrolling Super Mario game, maybe that's it for like the really kind of big stuff on Switch.
Yeah.
So what are you left with? And it is kind of stuff like, yeah, you know, like we can have remakes of Super Mario RPG and Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, and we can have virtually anything Mario you can think of in the aftermath of the success of the movie, it would seem. So yeah, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff that you would expect, but nice to have a few things that felt a bit more left field, like the Vanillaware game. I'm ashamed to say, more than once I temporarily process it as Unicorn Overload.
So do I.
The same way.
Very much sort of an oxymoron, isn't there? There isn't meant to be enough unicorns that we can be overloaded.
Or you know, I've also in my head said Unicorn Overdrive, which is
now I've just got, you know, the Stephen King movie, but instead of the green goblin on the front of a truck, it's just a giant unicorn face with a horn.
There we go.
So you could stab things with the truck instead of just run them over. That was, you know, not something I was particularly expecting. Of course, F-Zero. I mean, anything new F-Zero, even though it's like not that new because it's so, you know, just based on the Super Nintendo game. But, you know, something online to play F-Zero wise, just a new way to experience those classic tracks that, you know, I said I know so well, was to me, that was a cool surprise. I don't know how long it'll last. I think it can be quite ephemeral, but for today and hopefully a little bit longer, that was good fun as well.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Well, the thing is, I'm at this point, I'm never actually looking forward to these Nintendo Directs because I've got enough on my plate.
Fear
so,
them.
Like, yeah, I kind of, but no, I was happy to try F-Zero 99. It's pretty fun, and I'll go back to it again until I, you know, lose interest. But every time, like, I'm kind of so pumped to be playing some RPGs on my Switch when I see these. But then I remember, like, oh yeah, like I keep putting off actually finishing Tears of the Kingdom. I'm still not done with that.
Oh,
you know?
Geez.
And oh yeah, like, and like I've got like, yeah, yeah. No, it's the mental weight of having the backlog that I have right now currently kind of prevents me from getting too excited about it.
If anybody's going full Milhouse with the fireworks factory on us doing the spoiler cast of that game, it sounds like they're going to have to suffer for a while longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, it's for me, I'm not going to be back in Tears of the Kingdom Land for a long time. Thanks to Starfield, thanks to Cyberpunk. It's not going to happen for a while.
Y'all are just ruining this for us. Well, yeah. I'm going to have to replay the game so I don't remember it now.
Yeah, it's true. I killed my memories.
Yeah, I wish I had been taking notes because the beginning of the game was a while ago now.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Right, the death of the spoiler cast right here. You just heard it.
I'll try and reprioritize it, but for some reason I've started playing Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse.
Oh, God.
And I'm at the beginning. Yeah. I don't know. Especially RPGs, like I keep kind of jumping from one to the next, and like the beginnings are usually pretty interesting, and then I do the same with all of them. I kind of lose interest at some point, and basically, yeah, we won't be doing any spoiler cast for any RPGs ever.
Well, you won't. Greg and I did one this year already.
Yeah, yeah. We did. I did like a matter of a few days of it coming out. Because we both devoured it like we'd been on a desert island without any games to play ever. And
I can't do that. It's impressive.
I don't do that. I'm too old for that shit. It was just like, I just cleared my weekend for the draft, and then it's like, have Xenoblade DLC, and it's like, I can have both.
Yay! I just gave up on life for 4 days and just absolutely plowed through it. So mine was just pure self-destruction. All right. Well, I think that pretty much covers the direct. Give me one second. Yeah, we are at an hour 45. I think it pretty much covers everything then.
Mm-hmm.
Unless y'all wanted to touch on any of the email that came in. But I think all of them that we haven't touched on can wait. I did want to mention...
The Unity stuff we can't possibly cover, I guess.
Yeah, so we got an email about the Unity stuff that's going on. We'll talk about it next week. Right now, everything is in this weird shaken up phase. I did want to just call it out.
In short, someone is demanding royalties for me doing a Jar Jar voice.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's their explanation, or their symbolic explanation of what the ask
is. So I guess, that's your encapsulation of how messed up that situation is, I guess.
And it gets worse because they're trying to backpedal but not be seen as backpedaling, as they're calling it clarifications. One of their clarifications seemed to imply that Nintendo, as the distributor of eShop games, would be on the hook for paying for every time a game they sold was in a game sold on their shop, but not by them, was installed. And it's like, so Nintendo's on the hook for a sale they didn't make? No, that's not going to happen. Good fucking luck with that, Unity. Microsoft's on the hook for every time a Game Pass game gets pulled? Yeah, have fun with that.
Yeah.
Lawyers will see your ass in court.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of mind-blowing how the thing doesn't really look all that legal, but also it doesn't look enforceable.
Yeah, the whole thing's a mess. It's a mess. Yeah. So we can give more detail on it once more details available. But right now, it feels like the ground shifts every time I look at that story.
Right. I feel like they'll eventually roll it back.
But they can't. So they have to like keep making quote clarifications until they get to a spot where they've effectively like red lettered out everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the damage has really been done because people are oh, okay, you're like that? All right. Well, I don't want to even deal with you anymore as a company because I obviously can't trust you.
Yeah, so this hurts the viability of the engine going forward. And there is another engine that relatively recently opened up its crowdfunding to enhance its documentation. It is a fully open-sourced engine. I'm blanking on its name right now.
Godot,
yeah. Started their crowdfunding campaign to do things like have good documentation, because they don't right now, and move that thing towards a more production-friendly product. Guess what day they opened up their crowdfunding campaign?
Probably the day that Unity announced this.
Sure did.
Yep.
Sure did. So, you know, I could see somebody who makes big contributions to open source projects, Microsoft, dumping some money in that they will never even notice is missing, but could make a big deal for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is Rictello, how to kill your brand in 20 seconds.
Yeah. Can I just say that guy, he had like, if you put the word douchebag in the dictionary, you would put that guy's face beside it.
Yeah. It's
he
not
has
great.
The most douchebag face I've ever seen on a human being.
It's not great.
he just looks like a smug rich guy.
And the thing is, like, it That's just genetics to a certain degree. Like, it just is. But I will say one thing in his defense, the one people keep bringing up, oh, he sold stock. He sold 2,000 shares out of the, like, 193,000 he has on a scheduled sale that happens all the time. Calm your jets. This wasn't him bailing out. If he was going to bail out, he sold more than, like, 1% of his holdings. Mm-hmm. This is just something. This is probably how he's paid. He's probably paid in stock, and he just auto-sells X number of shares on the cycle. This is an insider trading. Don't go writing your insider trading stories. All you have to do is look up how many shares he owns. And if he was insider trading and only sold this few, he's a very big idiot. He's a big dumb man with doing big dumb things. So we'll dive into this one in a little more detail and give it what it deserves. We also got an email about Ogre Battle 64 less than 9 hours before this obviously Ogre Battle inspired game came out. And that's very weird and was announced. And that's very weird and creepy. And I don't know how I feel about it. So if you are a psychic ghost writing us emails about Ogre Battle, don't do that. Don't spook us like that. Just wait till after the thing that you're trying to get out in front of, because it's very unsettling. But Guillaume,
mm-hmm.
let's say somebody is a psychic ghost, and which means they're both dead and have psychic powers and can see the future. So they're precognitive psychic ghosts, and they wanted to send us an email with the keyboard they can't type on. But let's say they inhabit a body and then they're able to type. Where would they send such a spectral email?
Assuming they haven't been caught by Luigi, I guess they could write to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com.
That's right. That's RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com, where you can send us your questions, comments, thoughts, reactions to the direct, accidental projections into the future. All of them go to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com. It's an email address. Well, Nat, it's time for some music. Greg, what do you got?
It is. First of all, I should mention on the subject of music that since the last episode, since we did the last episode of this podcast, we got a new episode of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition that TYP has published, and this one is with me for the first time in a couple of years. But I didn't really do much of the picking this time, I'm guessing, along for the first time in quite some time, which was a little bit daunting, but TYP was nice enough to put in some stuff that wasn't too difficult to guess, shall we say. I feel like he perhaps took pity on me. But also, if you just kind of boot up the podcast, you're not kind of like paying attention to the title, you might be wondering why you get accosted with the like invincibility music from when you eat a heart fruit in Yoshi's Story with the really terrible electric guitar sound. And that is my fault, because at some point in the show, I mentioned that I can be quite picky about electric guitar kind of sounds in earlier games. You know, when they don't sound quite right, they can be quite grating. I did not choose that as an example, but my God, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad.
So if you're wondering why CYP led off that's very much my responsibility, great to be able. It was kind of short notice, but I thought, you know what, I think I can record that with you and not sound like a total zombie, so I will take the opportunity now and do it. So that was great fun. And then with respect to the closing music, I thought we'd go with, as Nintendo decided to close the show with Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, I thought we'd go with something from that. And in fact, I thought we'd go with something you actually heard a little bit of, the new version of, in the direct, right, with the kind of changed instrumentation, of course. But still, the original soundtrack, I think, performed pretty well, and that's the version you'll hear just now. But this is, I think, as far as I've been able to find, just referred to as the main theme of Paper Mario Thousand Year Door. And like I said, you could hear a difference already with the new instrumentation, and certainly based on how rich stuff like Origami King is, I'm really looking forward to how the whole thing turns out with that. But like I said, this original version is still pretty good, I think, and a really nice kind of you get that Mario theme feel while actually still being, you know, something of his own.
Cool. All right. Well, on that, it's time for us to go. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.